Hey, it's the Pratfalls Podcast. I'm Levi, the host, producer, just the guy who makes it. There's nobody else, really. I don't know why I say we sometimes. Anyways, I'm excited to share this episode. It's a really fun one. This is a conversation with my friend, comedy maker, performer, delightful person, Maddie Gibba. A few little items. We're part of the Noise Picnic Network. Go to noisepicnic.com for other great episodes. And my plug for this episode is actually for a project that Maddie is putting together and that we talk about in the episode. She is trying to create a pilot for a show called Down and Out that I'll let you listen to in the actual episode. But if you go to indiegogo.com and put in Maddie Gibba, you will find more information. You can watch her video. I encourage you to do so. I've known Maddie Gibba for a long time, a lot of years. She is a super funny person who loves to bring joy into the world, and that means this episode is full of silly bits. We certainly do have some real conversation and really do talk about work and life and relationships and travel, but also there is much silly voices and much silly nonsense, and it makes me so happy, and I think you will like it too. So without any further ado, here is my fun times with Maddie Gibba.
I think that's fine. That was a beautiful time. So, you're Maddie Gibba.
I am.
That's a thing I know. And so you are someone I've known for a while.
Mm-hmm.
In, I think, just through comedy contexts.
Yes.
I don't know how to contextualize you. I don't really remember meeting you.
I don't remember meeting you.
You just exist.
I just remember knowing you in a lot of lobbies.
Yeah.
Just be like, oh, hey.
Hey,
we're at another lobby waiting to go into something.
How's this lobby going?
Let's do a bit in the lobby, huh?
Yeah, lobby bits.
Lobby
bits. That's how I know you.
I think there's a whole portion of people, probably in people's lives, that are just lobby bit people.
I have a lot of lobby bit relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And that I treasure.
Yeah.
That are like, oh, good.
Like,
I know what to do in the lobby now.
That person's a lobby bit person. Oh, thank God. I don't have to look on my phone the whole time.
Right. Or just not, you know, just pretend I didn't notice that person.
Because
someone you know
lot.
Is not game for lobby bits. I didn't see you. I'm so, oh, there you are.
Right.
I wasn't pretending I didn't know you were here.
Last night, can I tell you this?
Yeah.
Last night I went to a Fringe show and one of the actors came out and did lobby bits with me because he said I looked lonely in the lobby. And I was like, what a friend to come out and do some lobby bits with me.
He didn't have to tell you that though.
No, but he was like, God, you looked lonely. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
Did you feel like you were lonely?
No.
So it was just that he put that on you.
I think he projected his loneliness on
lonely.
Me, probably. He was lonely in the dressing room full of 18 other people, probably.
But that can be lonely.
Right. That can be. It's
existential.
I don't feel lonely in lobbies. I go to things all the time by myself. Are you a by yourself person?
That's a t-shirt. I don't feel lonely in lobbies. Because I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out. Do you go to things alone?
I do. I like it a lot. I like movies by myself.
Yeah.
I love grocery store by myself. It's just a thing I treasure.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love going out to eat alone with no phone, no book,
no notebook, no nothing.
I just go out and I'm like...
Well, here's a weird... We're going rogue. Right away. I'm born in the city,
mm-hmm.
and I really like the city.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm like somewhere not city feeling,
mm-hmm.
I feel isolated there.
Yes.
But when I'm in the city, I don't actually want to talk to anyone. I want to be alone around a bunch of people.
Yes. Yes.
Which is, you have that too?
Well, yeah, because I've been living in New York for the past 5 years, so I'm always like, I want to be alone at all times. And everyone's like, no, you could never be alone. I just went to a cabin, like way up north when I got home from New York. And I was like, this will be great. I can decompress. I like went with a kid I went to high school with. And it was really, really great. And I thought it was 2 days. And I was like, I'm going to go crazy. I'm going nuts.
Did you have wireless?
No.
No, that's...
I mean, I had phone access.
Yeah, but...
But... I just couldn't, I thought genuinely I was going to go nuts.
Yeah.
And I thought like, go take a walk in the woods. And I'm like, I'm not a person who likes walking in the woods. That's not me. That's not my shtick. Like then I sat on a dock and I saw this little beaver and he was taking sticks to his dam. I watched him for 45 minutes and I was like, well, at least he's here. Like I'm not all alone.
Like... Well, can we... I feel like there's a million things unpacked in that little tiny story. But I want to get at that idea of that's not that's not who I'm not someone who takes walks in the woods.
Yeah.
That, like, who you are person kind of thing. Because I definitely have a, like, oh, I'm this, like, I'm the city person. Or, like, I, and even, like, so we're improvisers and we do comedy, both
yes
of us.
And. Yes, yeah. And.
But that is a thing most people are terrified to do.
Right.
And it seems like it's all about taking risks and taking chances. And I love that about it. But I think I'm actually pretty risk averse. Like, I don't like to do things outside my comfort mm-hmm. zone. I've just found that weird thing is really comfortable for me.
Right.
Do you feel like you are trying to find ways to break outside of the your own expectations for yourself, or are you fine being inside of them?
Yeah. I've been trying to, like, release myself from who I think I am. So I've been trying to...
And I also should just say, we're not, like, super stoned right now.
No. Although we are sitting on the floor...
I think that might be adding to
...of
it.
An attic.
Yeah, and there's a guitar behind you.
There's a guitar, like, behind me. There's, like, definitely, like, some tie-dye in the other room.
We should be high.
I wish I were 90% of the time. but, like, I try to, like... I try to get out of myself a little bit and get out of my head. So today, for instance, I was thinking about this whole list of things I had to do. And I got down to one of the things and I said, well, that one's dumb. And I thought, you literally teach and perform improv for a living, self.
Yeah.
And you have learned the art of saying no. Like, I pay so much money. People pay me so much money. It all under the umbrella of improv. Only for me to take the theory of yes and that I am preaching and flying the flag for.
Right. It's your
to
life's
perfect
work.
Perfect and quaff saying no.
Hmm.
And I'm not sad about that. Because in some ways it's like given me such power.
Yeah.
Because I've learned how to say no to things of like to discern.
Yeah.
To be a good discerner. Is that a good word?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that I'm breaking out of myself to just say that although I fly the flag for yes and, it's okay to say no.
Well, and you know, like, when you get good at improvisation, then no is magical.
No is magical. Because
and that's all. You've just broken through.
You can say, well, right, you can say no in the spirit of yes and.
Yeah, it moves things forward.
Yes.
And you saying, this is dumb, I'm not doing it, lets you move on to something that makes more sense.
Right. And it was given life. It had some moments. It had some. I tried to flesh it out, and I was like, "No, go away for a minute, because I don't like you, and go just sit in a drawer, and I'll go touch you later."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, creatively touch it.
I don't need to know your process.
I mean, I keep all of my scripts in a drawer and pet them.
You just yeah.
In order to get them into my brain, you know.
That seems pretty normal.
Right, but I always say that, like, improv, for instance, is something that. Performers, it's great for performers, wonderful.
Sure.
But it's really something that everyday people should be doing.
Yeah.
And that's what
civilians.
Because now that I'm not performing improv 11 times a week, I'm a human again.
And that is a nightmare.
And that's a nightmare, a true nightmare. It's
because you were performing on a boat.
I was.
Which is, I'd love to talk about the whole experience, but it is, you are doing a lot of stage time.
Yes.
And for a mixture of people interested, not interested.
For sure. And a mixture of wasted and not wasted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're... But now that, like, I'm not performing every day and I'm picking and choosing my performance aspects, I've had to say to myself, like, you're going to be a person with a hobby.
Mm.
You're going to get a hobby because, unfortunately, your hobby became your career. So... I've had to do things like learn how to cook or teach myself a ukulele and tell myself that those are okay things to do and say yes to new experiences that don't necessarily mean I'm up being validated and applauded for what I'm doing.
Right.
Just things that make me happy. That right. I'm a person that my shtick now is that I make me happy.
Oh, I like that.
That an audience isn't going to validate my happiness or going to decide my happiness.
So you have to find happiness internally.
Internally.
And let that drive you.
Yeah.
Are you successful at doing that?
I think so. I think so. I mean, I'm in a situation in which I'm taking a little break from New York to do some projects. And it came at a time when I left New York when I loved my apartment. I loved my roommate. I loved my job. I loved my friends in New York. I love New York City. And I thought, what a wonderful time to leave New York.
It didn't kick you out. You left.
Yeah, it didn't kick me out. What if I leave New York on a high note? What if I leave New York when I'm happy, as opposed to I'm having a meltdown, so I have to retreat somewhere else? Yeah. And I'm so proud of myself for saying yes to myself enough and checking in with myself enough to know that happiness is, I can create that. That happiness isn't something that I'm seeking out because I already have it.
Well, you've always seemed like a happy person.
Which I am a broad, very happy person.
Are you? Is that accurate?
I'm an optimistic person, which I don't necessarily means always happy. I'm okay having ebbs and flow.
Also, if you're just like constantly happy, that's like
you're a psychopath. Like you probably have killed before.
Yeah. Well, you're about to.
Yeah. You're on the verge.
You'll peak. That's peak happiness.
Your peak happiness ends in something terrible.
A pool of blood.
But I am generally happy. But I'm also these days being okay with having a moment of not being happy and understanding that. Can you tell I've been, like, reading a lot of, like, I'm like, where's my happiness? Oh, my God, I'm going to read a lot of spiritual literature on it. But be okay
the
knowing
that. The power of now.
The power of now. But being okay knowing that it ebbs and flows and that, like, I read this metaphor once that said that humans aren't searching for happiness. They're born with happiness. Mm. So it's like the idea of wearing a necklace and running around a room trying to look for the necklace. Mm. When in reality you're wearing it, but you just haven't. You can't see outside of yourself and your madness in order to know that it's already on you. So once I got into that, I was like, oh, it's already here. Humans are born happy. And it's only my job to just facilitate my happy. Keep my life clear in order to access it.
I like that.
Yeah.
What?
I've been doing a lot of journaling.
I can tell. You're ready to, like, process. Like, you're ready to unpack.
I'm like, let's unpack
what
this.
I mean by that is, like, yeah, I didn't really have to, like, dig. You were just like, no, I've got this hole already. If you'd like to look and see what's in there.
Just dive into the hole.
But how do you think about the idea of, like, you said you made your hobby, you actually said, unfortunately, I made my hobby into my career, into my work, which is a weird, like, a thing an artist craves, but then pretty quickly that is then your job.
Right.
So I'm curious how you think about work and if there's any sort of negative of getting to have a lot of the thing you do for income or just spending your time is a thing that you started out that you would do it. Uh-huh. Like, no one could stop you from doing it.
Right.
Like, is there tension for you in that space?
Yeah. I grew up, my family is a family of artists. My grandmother is an opera singer. I grew up around opera singers. I grew up in her home with my parents, in our home, and around her students and watching people's careers. So I always say that, like, I was raised a show pony. And I had the only parents in the entire world that were like, please be sensible, move to New York. Mm. Like, they were just, please, just, like, make it happen, go. Yeah. And so I was raised to be a musical theater girl. And I made a living making musical theater. And that was great, and I loved it. And then I started doing improv because I wasn't getting all of the jobs I wanted to get. Mm. And then suddenly improv took over. And so what I ended up doing in order to alleviate some of the stresses of what was originally my job of musical theater then turned into my job, and now I do sketch and improv. And now I've combined them all.
Yeah, you're singing and...
Now I'm like, oh, I can sing too.
You're doing variety.
I'll just do a variety. But I do think that you then become bitter about it. Like, a couple years ago, I found myself at the Chicago Improv Festival doing a show with my favorite people in the entire world that we had been invited to do it there. And I took a class and I said I was miserable. I looked a teacher in the eye at that festival and said I was miserable. And she was like, you're miserable? And I said, yeah, I'm really miserable and I don't like doing improv anymore. And she went, well, what a luxury. Like, you're probably a real a-hole. And I was like, yeah. She was like, 24 hours of your day. You have 24 hours of your day. You have an hour of your day where you have an opportunity that to pretend you're not an asshole at a show. So why don't you take that opportunity? And like, it really, it, she said to me, she was like, go get a hobby.
Yeah.
Because you're eating, breathing, doing this too much, and you have lost your spark and your love for it.
Yeah.
And I think
it's like an unhealthy codependent relationship.
Exactly. And she was right. She was completely right. And I went and got myself some hobbies, and I just took some distance and, like, instead of grinding, instead of doing my work grinding down to the bone and burning myself at both ends, I tried to find balance in my life, which made me find joy in my job again. And I think that I'm a happier person. And I think actually the product that I create in my work is better because I'm a person who picks up a newspaper and reads a newspaper, and I'm not just reading improv books.
Right.
And I'm a, like, I'm trying to find, I'm certainly not doing it all to the best of my ability yet, but I'm trying to find balance in different parts of my life so that my work has more color and more, it's more interesting. And it's coming from the perspective of a person who's in the world.
Yeah. Well, and you're three-dimensional.
Yeah.
Like, if you get obsessed with the one thing, then I think inevitably that you're going to lose a bunch of other notes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just so, like, super monotone and not interesting anymore.
Right.
But also, I imagine that's sort of scary to pull back on something that you're getting a lot of opportunities and you're getting a lot of access and people are giving you really nice praise and feedback and want to see you and invite you to be a part of their thing and having to say no to those things.
Yeah, you say no to those things. And then what was weird is that you say no to those things and you don't exactly know why, and you don't, but you know that it's not making you happy. And you know that when you're on stage, it's not, you're not necessarily happy. And yeah. I found myself at that point where I was like, I'm not happy. Why am I not happy? Why are these shows not good? Oh, because I don't want to be here. And like, that's a scary thing.
Yeah.
That's a very scary thing.
And it's not fair to the other people you're there with.
No. It's also not fair to the people who are paying cash money to watch you do something. Like, right. They don't need to come and watch a sad sack waddle around the stage. Like, that's, no, that's a waste of time.
Although your character, Sad Sack Waddler.
Sad Sack Waddler, I mean, sold out stadiums.
Stadiums.
People were just, and the thing is, they
unmiked.
Would. Unmiked. Unmiked people would gather in a stadium, just packed.
Yeah.
And Sad Sack Waddler would waddle out on stage, a slow waddle, right?
Yeah.
People would explode.
Yeah, yeah.
Sad Sack Waddler would waddle back off stage. Right. People would be like, encore, encore. Sad Sack would waddle halfway on stage, fall down, and people would be like, whoa. Sad Sack Waddler would get back up, waddle off stage, end of show. Show was only 4 minutes long. But stadiums.
And worth it.
Worth it.
Takes longer to get in and out.
Yeah. Oh, because security.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take, but.
Because there are a lot of people who want to attack Sad Sack Waddler.
Yeah.
So the security is checking everyone.
Problem is that Sad Sack Waddler, if you really boil it down, was pretty politically charged.
That's true.
But, you know, at a certain point, you get burnt out.
Yes. I think you've made your case. Abundantly clear that somehow you're finding joy in whimsy again.
Yeah.
Well, what about a different? So I recently saw you. I just saw you play ukulele. You were an opening act for a show.
Were you at that show?
I was. I had to dash. To
hello.
Hello. Secret. I've been watching everything you've been doing.
Oh my god.
Some pretty weird stuff.
Some pretty weird things.
But let's talk about the ukulele.
Yeah.
But you mentioned, like, I gotta get a hobby, and then ukulele, and then suddenly ukulele is a thing in a show. Like, it's not a hobby anymore.
Isn't
it's
that
part
the
of
worst?
The job.
Yeah, pretty soon, I'm gonna just start cooking on stage.
I think it's gonna happen.
I mean, did I tell you that I was called into audition for MasterChef?
No. Okay. I would like that story, please.
I diverted the conversation.
No, but I want this.
Okay, so I put this.
Because I love MasterChef.
Okay, so do I. But I put something stupid on Instagram.
That's where a lot of good stories.
A lot of good stories start there. I made this kale stew, and I was like, well, all the kids are out doing Molly, I'm putting kale in my stew. You know, because I'm hilarious.
Yeah, that's a home run.
A home run. oh, sad sack waddler.
you hit a bird with a bat.
If Prairie Home Companion needs anyone to do their...
And they do.
They do. I'm a bat.
It's only that.
Yeah, it's
no matter what they describe.
They're like, and then he walked into a haunted mansion. I was like, and they're like, no, that's a stadium. That's like, a baseball
you
stadium.
You have to do some of the work. Meet me halfway.
All right, fine, fine. They were on a gondola ride in Italy.
I get it.
Right? So anyway, I put this stupid thing on Instagram. I get this email from this woman, this like direct message. Mm. She's a producer.
Beth Opportunity.
Beth Opportunity.
I'm good with names.
She emailed me and said, I'm a producer, a scouting producer for MasterChef. Will you come spend an entire day in a Times Square hotel?
Okay, be honest with me. Did you think this was an attempt to murder you?
Yes, for sure I did. And I Googled her.
Yeah. And
immediately.
It said this lady murders.
She was like, Beth Opportunity is murdering. No, I checked her out. Everything checked out. I had to make this video.
You did your due diligence?
I did my due diligence. I rolled into that Times Square.
So you made a video in advance?
I made a video in advance just so that they knew who I was.
Yeah.
And then I went there. I had cooked something. I brought it. They don't care if it's cold. The only thing they're not judging you on is if it's cold. Obviously, because you're like sitting there. But I was VIP.
Ooh.
And I went in.
Because of your sweet Instagram
Because my sweet
your
gram.
Insta- yeah.
So I went in and I made it down to the top 10 in New York.
Wow.
And I know the moment they didn't pick me.
Well,
we were in the final room.
Racism.
It was pure racism.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we were in the final room with people. The people and the executive producers said, who in this room would you want to do a group challenge with? And this woman literally went down the row and she talked about every single person. And then she looked at me and she goes, and I wouldn't pick you, sweetheart. And it's not because it's just, you seem really into fashion. And I was like, what? Obviously you didn't try my chicken piccata. Like you didn't try it. And
what were you wearing?
What was I wearing? I don't even know. A cute little outfit.
Yeah,
something cute.
I mean, you are very...
fashion.
Cutesy. Yeah,
very cutesy. I was trying to bring it at MasterChef.
Yeah.
And so she... Yeah.
Do you think she was making a move? Was it like a throw you under the bus?
You mean sabotage move?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's making
reality TV. Sabotaged me.
Did she get on the show?
I don't know. But when they asked me at the end what I would do with all the money that I won... I then went in for blood, and
I'd hire a hitman or woman.
Or woman, I'm with her.
If that's what they would object to. Well, I didn't mind the murdering, but the sexism.
But the sexism was a lot to deal with. So basically, they said what I would do with the money, and I said, well, I wanted to create a television show, because they say that food brings people together, but I want to tear them apart. And so my idea is to start producing a show in which I go into families' homes, cook them dinner with their entire family, and I start digging up some shit. And the guy was like, so you'd use whatever the amount of money was. He was like, you'd use that amount of money for that? And I went, well, right. And then I looked directly at that woman because I said, because of fashion. And like, truly made no sense. But I was like, so tired. I didn't want
to
be there anymore.
Yeah.
I was covered in chicken piccata juice. Like, it was not good. I didn't make it.
No.
Because, like, I think everyone on that show is, like, a refugee or something.
Yeah. And you didn't want to pretend you were a refugee.
They didn't want my story. I'm not a refugee.
A few times.
I'm like, they're like, stop coughing on the food.
I saved
like,
my mother, I guess.
I saved my mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my MasterChef story.
That's pretty good. But you didn't make it.
No.
You were plucked diamond in the rough.
Diamond,
and, like,
and I ruined that opportunity.
Not quite a diamond.
But going back to your original question.
What your name is.
Well, my name is Manny Gibbon.
There it is.
Yep. No, your original question was about why did I take my hobby and then make it something I do on stage.
Or just did you observe that was happening? And has that happened before? Like how often? Because it's a thing that happens to me.
Do you do that?
Yeah. If I am interested in something, then I like get a book about it.
Right.
First, that's always my first step.
Mm-hmm.
Read the book, try to learn the thing or do the thing or figure out the thing. And then immediately my brain's like, how is this a part of the things I already do? Or how is this a job? Or how do I share this with people? Like,
right.
I don't know why.
Because you're a lifelong learner.
Thanks for spinning it positive.
Right.
Or I need external validation for anything that I do.
Or that.
Yeah.
I think that works too. No, I think you're interested. I think everything I see you do and everything I see...
Oh, go on.
Everything I see you do and everything I see you share and participate in is in an effort to better the world in some way.
Well, thanks. That's true. Although that's been like... I've been actively trying to
You've been trying to do
That's pointed, like, for the last few years.
And you're still doing it, which is great.
No, I'm into it.
And I love that.
I felt gross desiring attention, and then I was like, I want to give other people attention. And
right.
And if that also fills me up, then hooray.
But here's a question.
Okay.
Playing that devil's advocate.
Oh, do it.
Do you think that...
Where'd you get those horns all of a sudden?
Those are my horn sounds.
Poor bird.
He never got a chance. He's like, I'm just flying around. You guys can't...
Quit coming by here.
But...
I'm going to put in real bird noises in my edit.
I hope so. Can you make my whole voice sound like a bird?
Oh, yeah.
For the whole time. Wait, so I'm like...
Do you think it doesn't sound like a bird now?
Can I tell you something real?
Please do. We've been too focused.
I legitimately had some work in which I was doing some radio work.
Okay.
And I had someone in power tell me I sounded like an excited Muppet. And I was like, that's not something. With a lisp. An excited Muppet with a lisp. And I was like, there's not much I can do with that. And my parents paid a lot of money as a child for me to get rid of this lisp in speech therapy. So, like, let's not bring it up again.
Yeah.
Maybe she's sensitive about it.
Well, at least you're excited.
I know. At least I'm excited.
You're a bummer Muppet. Why did I feed you another voice opportunity?
Bummer Muppet. Oh, God.
That's drowning Muppet.
No, this is drowning my...
So dark.
So dark.
Yeah. It becomes a wet blanket.
Because it's made out of Muppet fur.
Ruining
I get
everything.
What's happening
good,
here.
Good. Let's explain it.
Okay. Devil's advocating.
Go on.
Do you think in an effort, I'm not saying that this is what you do, but do you think that in an effort to promote other people, in some way you're still promoting yourself?
Yeah, well, let me tell you this. I don't know how rarely am I interviewed on this, I would say. People don't flip it much, which I like. A lot of it was a reaction to my jealousy. So you and I both have really talented friends.
Yeah, and we're raging with jealousy at all times.
And raging with... Yes, I had a lot of jealousy, and I didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
Because there are some people who I don't like that much. There's certainly some where I'm like, I don't respect you, and I don't think you should have gotten that opportunity.
But the, like, mutual circle that you and I run in...
You are amazing,
yeah.
And I want you to win, but also a little mad. And even times where I didn't even try to get a thing, and someone got it, and I'm like, why not me? Answer, you did not try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a thing you even do. Why isn't my book published? Haven't written one.
Have you
written
like that
book yet? Stuff. But I saw that jealousy.
Why isn't my book published? Don't own a computer or can't read. Yeah, I get that.
But I saw that jealousy and I wanted to do something to change it. And so at first, there was like 6 months where if I said something nice about you, it was burning jealousy and me just trying to not feel gross. So I was like, here's some praise. I'd like on the internet share like, hey, check out this thing this guy I know is doing. It's really cool. I'd go to see the person's show at whatever. I'd find a way to support it because of that jealousy. And that got shorter and shorter and shorter, the distance between me being jealous to me doing something about it. And now it doesn't feel even like jealousy anymore. Now it's just me trying to lift people up, amplify their work, highlight the cool things people are doing. And I actually like changed the emotional dynamics of it.
Yeah.
But it was totally like,
I love that.
Part of it is I get attention for it, but I've got enough confidence now that like I can make a show or write a thing or whatever and people will or won't like it. Like kind of like you,
right.
Like I'm mostly trying to chase what I'm excited about doing
for
that. But all the like highlighting other people is started with a negative and now it's totally just I'm sincere about it.
Like, I love that.
Really excited about other people. But it took a while.
Yeah, that takes a while. I think what flipped for me when I, because I don't want to say I'm a jealous person, but I'm a very aware person. Is that jealousy?
And you never forget.
And I never forget it.
Explain what that means.
I'm like very keenly aware of what's going on around me and what people are doing. And I think
a gorilla behind you right now, you haven't noticed it in 20
minutes. Oh, that's my boyfriend. His name is Ray. Ray, shh, baby, quiet. Okay. Oh, Jesus. I got to get more sleep.
I like it. You're like a lazy Sybil.
But, okay, so I'm aware of what people are doing. And I think that when you are... somebody told me... it's called show business. It's not called show fun. Yeah. Like, I love that so much. It's called show business, and a business person can look around and see what their other friends are doing to make their businesses work.
Yeah.
And you'd be silly not to be aware of what they're
and
doing
inspired by it and take
note.
Absolutely.
And with that, I looked at that and I was like, oh, what if there's space enough for all of us?
Yes. Abundance.
There's abundance.
Not scarcity.
Yeah. And that everybody gets a turn. And when a door closes for you, yes, when a door closes, another one opens. When a door closes, sometimes that door's going to just stay closed.
Sure, yeah.
And that's for you.
Wasn't even a door.
Wasn't even a door.
It was just a thin wall.
And now you got to go find like a window or something.
Yeah.
Like, I love that. And I love the idea of like, there's room enough for all of us. And maybe that's not a door you need to be going through, but it's time for you to find your place wherever you're supposed to fit. But everyone gets a turn.
Well, I sincerely think also, like, for me, like, live show stuff, more people who get more audiences means more people who want to go see stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I make stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a win.
That's a win.
I don't have any problem with that.
And
or, like, if you... So I want to talk about this project you're working on of creating a show, like a digital, like, television or online show. If that works for you, not only do I love the concept, but also somebody who's in my circle succeeding in that space is good for everyone.
It's good for everyone.
Who wants to make those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a positive.
It's always a positive. And I think that anytime any energy is harbored on seeing negative in that, you're just perpetuating a negative energy around you that's going to make people not... see that it's your turn at some point.
And then you got to just smudge.
Got to smudge. Have you ever done that?
Not on purpose.
Oh.
I set things on fire.
Oh, okay. Mainly because I want the whole world to burn.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty.
It's just pretty.
And the screams sound like joy.
I smudged the apartment of the people I nannied. There was for sure a duck. No. No, not against their will, but...
They were sleeping.
They were sleeping, and I was like, shh, quiet.
I smudged them with knives.
I put this in your mouth. No, like, I was for sure positive that there was, like, a demon in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, we can't do this.
Yeah.
I can't live this life. I'm not about this life. So...
Yeah, did it work?
Yeah, we got liquored up, the mom and I, and we just smudged that place. I don't really think we did it correctly. We just were like waving sage everywhere and then be like, get more wine.
Do you think, that's cultural appropriation, right? Like you and I, non-native peoples smudging.
Right.
I'm
Probs though.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I culturally appropriated.
Not even calling you out.
Some wine.
It just occurred to me now that I'm like, horrible.
Isn't it also a, don't they smudge in exorcisms, right?
They use some incense burning.
And I'm like very Catholic.
Oh, yeah.
So like.
You've made the sign of the cross many times.
Yes.
While we've been talking.
Yes, I have again.
I like that you actually did it.
Well, not because I feel guilty.
No.
Jesus is always watching.
Of course.
I went to all girls Catholic school. I know how this works.
Did you actually go to all girls Catholic
school? I did.
School?
My whole life.
Are you still going? Because that's not okay.
I still go and just hang out.
Hey, girls, you need beer?
Why are you wearing the uniform still? Don't ask questions.
10 years out.
Didn't you graduate 10 years ago? I still have some things I gotta finish.
And the principal is just, we let her come. It's like a warning for all the girls to like get their shit together.
I live in a locker on the third floor.
That's you.
That's me. I deck that shit out.
Pimp my locker.
Pimp my locker. Yeah, I went. Didn't you know that about me? I went to an all girls Catholic. Yeah, there was a pimp. I went to an all girls Catholic school my whole life. It explains a lot about who I am.
Well, you're. I mean, you're comfortable around women, but.
Yeah, but men. What are they?
I agree. I mean, they're from Mars. That's all I know for sure.
I wrote a show for Illusion Theater, probably like 6 years ago, about growing up in Catholic school. It was a one-woman show.
What was it called? Did it have a good name?
Called Confessions from the Convent. Although, I'll change the name if it ever has another life, because that's a dumb name. Mm. It's a name I, like, totally would have wanted at 22.
But you've outgrown that name.
I, like, outgrown that name.
What do you think it would be called now?
Like,
Stories from the Almost Sisterhood. Still has to have an alliterative quality.
The Sisterhood of the Traveling Skirts.
Yeah, I think that's about
probably,
right.
That's it.
Probably it.
Right? But the first scene in it, I wrote, it was based on my first day at the University of Minnesota. And
that was the first time you were in a mixed school.
And I went to all-girls school starting in sixth grade.
Okay.
But I went to Catholic school my whole life. So my first day at the U of M was the day that the 35W bridge collapsed. And I remember, like, being in the room. They announced it. We were in orientation, and they announced it. And my first instinct was, why aren't we praying? Mm. And that was the first moment in my life that I was like, oh, you're in a very different environment. Like, and I didn't necessarily, like, I was raised by two hippies. Like, I was raised by two hippies who were Catholic based on social justice.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, so that was, I don't know, but that was the first instinct in my life that I was like, oh, you're in a different world now.
Yeah.
And then I also like looked around and I'm like, what's a boy? I don't know how those work. What do you do?
Where are you at with that question now?
That we're in a different world?
No, what's a boy? So you...
Oh, what's a boy?
You kind of have two home areas at the moment, and you have a weird... career structure, like you lived on a boat for a long
for
time.
For a year. Of,
yeah, a long time, which is a very strange, I mean, it can be really great. You're it's like going to a gym heavily. I mean, your muscles for the writing and performing stuff are strong.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice opportunity to like pocket some money.
Uh-huh.
You can save on, you know, living, you know, all that stuff. But also like those people you're on the boat with, that's your relationships, which I've heard plenty of those boat stories.
Oh, yeah.
but I'm curious, like, as you've made these choices and you continue to make these choices about where to actually physically be and what work to do, what does it mean for Maddie, who also, like, needs human interaction beyond just your parents?
Oh, boy.
Not even just romantic.
Yeah. We've opened up a vault. It's similar. So I tried to make a squeaky door.
I know, and then you remember.
And I was like, no.
You ruined the whole thing.
Well, that's interesting because, so I just wrote a show in New York. I wrote this one woman musical called Boy Crazy about the 39 men I've been in love with for a week or less.
Ooh.
It's a choose your own adventure musical.
And then people actually pick and then you would do.
Yeah. So there's a wall on the wall. It says 1 through 39 on the back and the audience picks the numbers and there are two scripts and, different gentlemen throughout the audience have to come up and play that other person.
Yeah.
So they're all the moments things went awry.
Yeah.
But with that, like, I would say with relationships, like finding a partner in life.
Not that you, I mean.
No, not that I have to, but
only way.
There's a little thing of you're like, you're 28 and you should. Yeah. I think I'm very bad at that. Like, I'm very bad at it. Very bad at it.
Yeah.
But I was bad at it when I lived in one place for a very long time. Mm. And I think that's just because I am very focused on what I want in my life and how I'm going to get it. Yeah. And I'm looking for someone to run alongside me and not necessarily have me like sit down while I do it.
Yeah.
And I haven't found someone who can support me like that yet. Mm. So I found many people I love.
Yeah.
And many people who are lovely and supportive in my life, but nobody who's willing to like support me in a way where they have their own thing going on and I have my own thing going on and we can just like run towards our things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah. And that's problematic for that. And I'm not necessarily looking to change that right now because I'm pretty happy.
Yeah.
But I would say with friendships,
you have friends in a bunch of different spots.
I got friends in every port.
only ports.
Though. Only ports,
it's
though.
A weird
it's
rule
weird.
You made.
Well, I want only
where are you moving?
Ocean
We're
based.
Done.
I need you to be in Maine.
Landlocked.
I can't take Wyoming. Get out of here. Do you even have water there? I would say with friends, I have some of my best friends in the entire world live in all of the cities that I spent extended periods of time in. So all my like best friends in Chicago, New York, LA, and Minneapolis, mm-hmm. and St. Paul. My mom gets very mad when I say Minneapolis. And I'm like, but you know that for the majority of my adult life when I lived here, I lived in Minneapolis. Right. She was like, it was a phase. She loves St. Paul. She's ride or die STP.
I'm from here, but
where?
I live in Minneapolis, the east side.
Oh, sure you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You went to Johnson?
Harding.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah.
Those were our rivals.
Oh.
And I care so much.
Yeah, so much.
No.
But I would say with, like, friends, I've become...
The TV show.
The friend.
Maddie's just had a friend stroke. Why are you singing it like French almost?
I'll be out there for you when the rain starts to fall. I'll be there for you. Why so many syllables? Yo, yo.
Yeah, they're so unnecessary. Just adding so many. Like there's an echo.
Because I'll be out for you too. That's good, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what their French names would be. Joey?
Joey? Chandler?
Still Ross.
Ross. Rachel.
Oh, yes.
Michelle. Wait. There would be for this.
Yeah.
Monica. Phoebe.
Who actually speaks French?
Duh, she does. The Lisa actor. Kudrow, she's the best.
Coods.
The Coods.
We call her.
Going back.
You were saying something about friends.
To friends, is that I think living on a boat helped this.
You mean a cruise ship, too.
I lived on a boat.
Not like a raft. All my friends are here.
I just realized that as I was making these sound of, I was miming being on a raft.
Yep.
Like, nobody could see. This is not a medium in which
nope,
people could see
you
that.
You are bringing it.
I'm
You're bringing
trying to bring
the space
it.
Work. It's all here. It's all happening.
So, living on one of those things where you are in the middle of the ocean, you don't have access to people.
Right. Yeah, and even, like, connectivity. Like, you can't text or it's hard to get any...
Although I found a hack. I figured out a hack.
A bird? You train a bird?
I trained a bird. Yeah. His name was Rachel.
We've run out of names.
We've run out of names. Call him.
We're going to need more names in here.
Can somebody get us more names? Our name generator's down.
Oh, crap. Oh. It's on the fritz.
Hold on. Let me see if my boyfriend can do it. Oh, okay. I think I just wanted this to be a radio play.
I believe you've forced your agenda.
I want it to be a play, too.
As subtle as it has been. Now, my favorite part is, though, I think people will learn a lot about you without full answers to questions.
They'll be like, oh, we know she's trying to find her happy, and in the meantime, she's a psychopath. But when you're on a cruise ship and you're in the middle of the ocean and you're in a different country for the majority of the week, you find time, you make time for the people in your life that are important to you. And so I'm also dealing with, like, I'm in my late 20s, so your friend circle whittles down a lot.
Yeah, married.
Everyone gets married and priorities change. And, but, like, I have friends that we all make time for each other, and I'm very grateful for that. So I don't really find it difficult with that. That's where all... When I come back to Minnesota, all my friends are like, I feel like I saw you yesterday. And I'm like, you probably did because I keep coming home.
But I'm happy.
I'm so happy.
Who's your least favorite friend?
Oh, God. Fibbit. Fibbit.
I'm going to plug in a name. Pretend it's your voice.
Who's your least favorite friend? No,
Well, so you've mentioned Interact several times.
Have I?
Yeah.
Today?
I think so.
I don't think on this podcast I have. Not.
Interact. You've worked with Interact.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I was talking to someone else. You've mentioned Interact.
Yeah, I did mention it.
For your boyfriend.
You don't work there. You're an ape. Get out of here.
Oh, they don't let apes work there?
No, no. It's a licensing issue.
I get that. Well, the hair alone.
Oh, the hair alone. It's just, nobody can handle the budget.
A hairnet suit? What do you do?
What do you do? Do you have an industrial vacuum to vacuum up his hair puddles? I don't know.
Hair puddles. What do they call them at a barbershop? Are they hair puddles?
I should know that. I worked in a salon for like 8 years, but no idea. Hair puddles? Piles of hair.
That's not very creative, though.
It's
a weird job.
Nest. Hair nests.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because if you just leave it on the floor for a while...
Birds come in. And
stuff
they're like...
happens. They're just trying to get out of the bat. Away from the bats. You feel like you've tied the... That's a nice...
Finally,
closer.
I tied it in. So, Interact.
Yeah, Interact is this theater...
Gone off the rails.
The key is the segues are seamless from one thing to another.
Yeah.
Well, can you talk about what you've worked with this organization Interact for quite a while? You're mocking me. Sorry for my trying to be sincere.
No, I love it. I'm very bad at talking with my hands, so when other people talk with their hands...
Do you never talk with your hands?
No, I talk with my hands too much, when someone can do it in an elegant fashion, I'm like... Oh,
well,
God,
I stand in front of the mirror every day and just practice gesturing.
Just
don't overdo it. Just, you know, it's like gentle. Tai Chi. It's Jeff Goldblum. I think actually, he does a lot of hand stuff.
He does.
He's real handsy.
Real handsy.
I wish.
He hit on my friend.
The weird thing is, I believe everything that you tell me. Like, no part of me is like, that's not a thing. Even though you're making, just a stream of nonsense is coming out of you. Like, delightful nonsense.
That's the title of my book.
A stream of nonsense? Yeah. But it's you peeing on the front of it?
Yeah, I'm like...
That's not a good peeing face.
It is.
So, Jeff Goldblum hit on a friend of yours?
Yeah, aggressively.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I guess she went on one date with him.
So it worked.
Yeah, I guess so, but...
He plays jazz piano. That's what I know.
Why do you know that fact?
Because I find him fascinating.
Why?
Because he is sincere about the craft of acting, even though he seems like such a
lunatic.
No, he seems affected. Like he has an affectation, but I don't know how much it was cultivated or what. Like, it's something about him that I find really, and he's great in like The Fly and Jurassic Park and
gotta love the Bloom
movies. You got. I'm golden for Bloom.
I'm gold. I love it.
Thank you.
I love it.
Thank you.
It's good.
We'll just call me and let me know if we can talk more about Goldblum.
Yeah, listen, I'm your safe place if you need to talk a little bit more about Goldblum. Yeah.
So I'll just be like, I'm going to Bloomies. Everyone thinks I'm going to Bloomingdale's.
And I'm like, no, he's getting some help. He's getting some help for some real serious things.
No, I want to talk a little bit about the project you're working on.
Oh, yeah.
But also kind of how you got there.
Yeah, so...
If we don't know how you got there, then it just seems opportunistic.
So stupid, right?
Yeah.
When I was 17... Actually, no. When I was 15, my sister did her senior project in high school at a place called Interact Center, which is
I've never heard of that.
It's a theater and art gallery for adults with disabilities, so developmental and physical disabilities. And so she did her senior project there. She spent 2 weeks there volunteering, and then she kind of never left. And she stayed there all summer volunteering, and then she would come back and volunteer all the time. So when it came time for me to do my senior project a few years later, I chose the very same thing and subsequently ended up being hired by them while I lived in Minneapolis. So I worked there a lot. I was basically like a long-term sub and taking over people's sabbaticals and helping write shows and teach different artists with disabilities. And we would produce giant shows, a couple of shows a year.
That the folks with various disabilities, physical and mental, would actually create the shows and then perform them.
Yeah, so we would create them in process together, mm-hmm. In our space, and we would write them together. It's a very cool system. So essentially, it's a program in which you're there all day, and everyone who's there, including the artists, are paid for their time. So it's their job, and you create in process, in a collaborative process, a new piece, and we do a couple of them a year. And it was great for me because I had a history in writing plays, so it was a good place for me to be able to write stories for people. I had music writing skills, and so that worked. And then improv is great for people with disabilities because what I learned there is this wonderful beauty of imperfection where you can teach somebody something till you are blue in the face. But if they have a brain injury or if there's something in their way with learning in the same way that you learn, you might as well teach the wonderful muscle of improvisation to make sure that those words that I wrote down on the page aren't always going to come out.
Right. You can support whatever happens.
Yeah. That you can get from point A to point B and feel wonderful and confident and look wonderful and confident doing it. Mm. So teaching improv there was the best place to teach it because it was so important, because there's no better time to improvise.
Yeah. I've done a little work with the Alzheimer's Association, and there's some really good work happening around the way to sort of work with, if you have a partner who has like early on onset dementia, mm-hmm. saying yes instead of just living in the frustration of having to repeat something or being confused by something.
Right.
And it's another one of those places where I feel like the skills of improvisation really facilitate.
There's also one of those things in that world is that saying no to somebody actually denies them the reality that they're in and scares them.
It's terrifying.
It's terrifying. So you're actually protecting them and facilitating their success by saying yes and helping enhance the world that they are in.
Right. Which is a sort of a compassionate kindness that I think we should try to do for
everybody
in general.
Right?
Like, we're all kind of making up our experience of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we spend a lot of time, like, correcting each other instead of going, like, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. You know, like that.
We always are thinking about how we could do it better.
Right, or the right way.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes your way isn't better, and that person's way isn't better either, but listen.
Yeah.
Like, be a person who listens.
Are you yelling at me right now?
I'm screaming. Yeah. I am screaming.
That's terrifying.
I'm screaming.
Well, so you have this thing that you have a crowdfunding campaign.
I do. I have an Indiegogo campaign that I'm working on.
You said you want a hand out, not a hand up.
So basically, my big old dream in my life is that I want to be creating content and producing content that I am in, that I'm producing and creating and writing, and has some purpose to it. And so I came up with this.
You mean beyond entertainment?
Beyond entertainment, yeah. Right? Like,
which is totally valid.
Which is sometimes totally valid, and which is always perfectly valid.
Yeah.
I'm just in a place where I want to, I have this idea, right? And my idea is that I wrote this pilot that is about myself in a group home of adults with Down syndrome. And the best part is that the whole story around it revolves around the fact that they're going to be evicted from their space. The group home's going to shut down. They can't afford to stay open. So what we do is we open up a cabaret in the back room. So
sort of let's put on a show to save the space.
Let's put on a show to save the space, but we're learning the stories of everybody. So a conscious thing I did in the pilot is I want the same amount. I want more people with Down syndrome on the screen than not. Mm-hmm. I want the idea that everybody can be seen on television and it's not a novelty. There was a show a couple years ago that had an adult with Down syndrome, a teenager with adults with Down syndrome, and she was kind of used as a butt of a joke. And I know that they didn't mean to do that, but I was so annoyed by that because working at Interact for as long as I have and working with people with Down syndrome specifically, they're some of the funniest people I know, some of the best performers, some of the most honest performers I've ever met, and they're not novelty acts. They're not a sideshow. My friends are not sideshows. They're wonderful, talented artists who we deserve to see their story. And so I wanted to create a vehicle for that. And plus I wanted to like sing and dance. Doesn't everyone want to sing and dance?
Yeah.
But I just think we're in a time in which everyone should be seen and represented.
Yeah.
If I can do that through humor, I want to do that.
So the fundraising is to go towards making this initial pilot?
Yeah, so the fundraising is going towards making the initial pilot and then being able to make smaller little webisodes to put online to garner enough excitement that someone would show interest in it, mm-hmm. who I could sell it to and would want to produce it.
To then fully make it.
Okay. To fully make it. Yeah. So our goal is to make one large episode and a few little episodes, a few little snippets or webisode items, and to see if this is something people want to see.
Hmm. Well, where does someone go on the internet to see the video and to give the money?
The link that I will give to you.
What's the link?
It's Indiegogo.com/... this is a really great question. It's a long one.
Yeah.
But it's down. The title is called Downs and Out.
So
and
if you Google that, or if you
Google
Indiegogo and you look up Downs and
Downs
Out,
and Out,
you'll find it.
You will find it.
And I'll put a link on the website too. But
it should be really fun. I'm really excited, and the actors that I have are people that I've worked with for years and years and years, and some of the funniest people with Down syndrome and without Down syndrome in the Twin Cities are
in it. And you
wrote
to some specific people, right? Like, and to their voices and to the, their styles. And
The thing is that I wanted to make sure that we wrote a story where, in the same realm as people with disabilities are not novelty acts. Why can't we get to know everyone's story and their backstories and what makes them tick? And instead of having someone be a novelty and a butt of a joke, what if it's their story?
I like that a lot.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of really cool things on the Indiegogo. Two of our actors in it are published authors. Their names are Mike Brindley and Matt Dahlstrom, and they have Down syndrome, and they are published authors, and they've both written poetry books. And so if you donate a certain amount of money, you can give them a few subjects and they will write you original poetry.
Cool.
Or gosh, you can come over and have dinner with Mike and Matt and my family and I, which is a difficult thing to do because there's a lot of feedback that happens in the Gippa household about people's opinions.
It'll be like a show. It'll be
like a dinner show. Yeah. And there are a lot of really funny things. If you donate a certain amount, I'll call you. If you have a medical issue that you're worried about, and I'll dramatically read WebMD to you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Could you gift that to someone
else? I would gift that to someone. Yeah. So if they're worried about something and they're like, I got this bump, I'm like, well, we're going to find it. It's probably cancer, but I don't want to ruin it for you. Nice. But we're going to dramatically read WebMD to you.
I think that is about bringing joy, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of my favorite pastimes.
Right.
So why not share it with others?
Agreed. I totally agree.
So stupid.
Also, you have like website internet places people can go to find you and when you're doing other showy things.
Yes, you can find all of my stuff at MaddieGibba.com.
Oh, nice.
Yes,
that's,
and it's
just like your name.
That's just my name. And my website just got a facelift. Do you know Jen Van Kam?
I do.
Jen Van Kam did an amazing art project for me in which she took a photo. She took a, did a whole photo shoot with me and then put me on a life-size diorama. So I'm essentially like riding a unicorn or riding dolphins. She's one of the coolest people I know in my entire life.
She's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, and so she is, her work sponsors my website.
So you should go to MaddieGibba.com to see Jen Van Kam's art.
Yeah, and then go to Jen Van Kam's website to see Jen Van Kam's art.
Right, but go to MaddieGibba.com first.
Yeah, do that. Then spend some time there.
Yeah.
Just and then mosey on over.
You got videos on there.
I have so many videos.
Your reel is on
my
there.
My reel's on there.
All your Once Upon a Child.
Oh my God, my Once Upon a Child, because everybody thinks that I look like a mom.
Really?
No, nobody does. I play a mom in five of those spots.
Wow.
I know. At one point, the girl, I think, was maybe a few years... The girl playing my daughter was a few years younger than me.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you were a very active child.
I was adventurous. I went to all-girls school, so I didn't really know how it worked.
No. Who could fault you for that? Well, Maddie, I really appreciate you talking to me.
This was so fun.
And I'm glad I got to meet all of your people.
Oh my God. Your friends. I'm glad we like sat on the floor of my parents' attic.
Yeah, me too. It's nice.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's just real chill up here.
We're just buds.
We're just buds kicking it. I should have brought the incense machine up.
You really should have.
Oh God, I should have diffused this room with orange oil.
It feels pretty infused
currently. Do you ever do that? Do you know about that?
Diffusing, yeah.
Do you know about the orange thing? You put orange oil in a diffuser,
okay,
and it makes children happier. And like subsequently, I'm so happy too.
Yeah, it's almost like you're a child.
I'm just a baby. I'm just a baby person.
I'm going to shut off the microphone.
Okay. Shut it off.
But this is never going to
happen. I'll miss you.
You just whisper, I'll miss you.